Welcome to Dig Deep, the mining podcast. In this podcast, we go deep into mining news, hot topics, and live interviews with mining professionals and leading figures in the mining industry. Introducing your host, Rob Tyson, founder and director of Mining International and Mining International Executive, a leading global mining recruitment and headhunting agency.
Hi, mining community. Welcome back to another episode of the Dig Deep, the Mining Podcast. And today's guest is actually a returning guest who has appeared before, this time last year, February 2023, which is episode 316. Tim Strong, who's the CEO of Asara Mining, which is formerly known as Golden Rim Resources, who are an ASX-listed gold exploration company who are developing a significant value by spearheading the next West African gold rush in its exciting flagship Kada Gold Project in Guinea. Tim's a Campbell School of Mines geology graduate and has worked and travelled around the world working for various junior major mining companies during his career, working on a range of projects from target generation through to exploration, planning and strategy, resource estimation and feasibility level studies. So Tim is here today to give us an update on Asara Resources, obviously with the name change as well, and looking at, we're obviously going to discuss the outlook of the company going into 2024. So that's welcome, Tim, to the podcast. How are you doing, Tim?
Good, thanks, Rob, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, and Happy New Year to yourself. And hopefully 2024 is going to be a good year for all and for everyone in the mining industry. So for those that didn't listen to the previous episode, which was just under a year ago, I wonder if you can just tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your career before we start speaking about Asara and obviously that name change as well.
Yeah, Rob, as you mentioned, I'm a graduate from the Camborne School of Mines, graduated quite a few years ago now from the Bachelor of Science Applied Geology degree. Went straight into the mining industry. First job was with Barrick in Pakistan at the Reko Diq project, which is currently going through a revitalization, which is great to see. One of the largest copper gold porphyries in the world. Being advanced by Barrick again. And then, I spent a lot of time in the junior space in East Africa, in Eritrea, Sudan, Ethiopia, Egypt. Then moved over to West Africa, actually, and spent a lot of time in Mali, Senegal, Sierra Leone, Cote d'Ivoire. And that included a few years with Perseus Mining at Yaouré, when it was actually Amara Mining, the British listed company, and then moved over to Resolute at their Syama project in Mali. So I spent a lot of time trudging through the forests of West Africa. I always seem to get dragged back there. Then in 2018, I left the sort of fly in, fly out lifestyle and started a consultancy company over in the US. But just due to my experience in Africa, most of my clients ended up being based in Africa anyway. So ended up coming back around and then sort of finished off the consulting with a lot of work in Egypt, drilling out a couple of projects there, and then joining Golden Rim in November 2022 as the CEO. Looking for a change in the direction of the company, a good project in Guinea that needed this sort of a new level of advancement. And that's what I've been doing for the sort of last year and 3 months. At Golden Rim, we changed the management, changed the board. We went out, raised some money, did a lot of work on our Kada project, which we can go into later. And then obviously, as you just mentioned, the change of the name sort of finishes that round of changes at Golden Rim. So yes, now we are Asara Resources.
Yeah. So I just want to even give us an overview of the company, and then obviously tell us about the name change and obviously how you came up with the name and what the reasons were behind that.
Yeah, look, definitely. So our main flagship project is the Kada Gold Project in Guinea. It's a near surface, mostly oxide gold deposit. Looking at bulk tonnage, low grade, it runs about 1 gram. The resource we've got there at the moment is 30.3 million tons at 0.95 grams per ton for about 923,000 ounces. 25% of that global resource is now in the indicated category. And you know, the oxide is what we're really focused on, and 40% of that oxide resource is now an indicated. So we've spent the year building up the confidence level of that project. We also have a 2 million ounce gold deposit in Burkina Faso, the Kori Gold Project, 2 million ounces at 1.3 grams. Obviously, due to the ongoing issues in Burkina Faso, we're still looking to divest that asset. It's a fantastic asset, and we, as a company, we would love to advance it ourselves. But you know, for a company of our size, it's just too difficult. So we're looking at divesting that. And then we have two projects. One is a solid deposit, small tonnage, moderate grade that needs a bit of love. And again, we're looking to divest that project. And then we have the Loreto Copper Porphyry Project, which we have a joint venture with Teck out of Canada. Teck are advancing that project on our behalf, and they're actually working very aggressively on that, and we hope to get some news out of that in the coming year. In terms of the name changes, as I previously mentioned, you know, Asara has gone through a lot of changes since I took over at Golden Rim Resources. You know, change of management, change of board, slimming down of the corporate budget, focusing on spending more money in the ground in Africa to advance our flagship project. And it was just really you know, it was the right time to change the name, just so that, you know, we can get the new story out there, show the market, show our investors that, you know, as a company, we're different, we're moving in a different direction, and we're ready to advance things. The name is actually quite an interesting one. A lot of people come and tell me, you know, "Oh, you always just picked any name with an A so that you could be at the top of the investor lists." I'll let you decide whether that was true or not. But you know, Asara is the Arabic word for hope, and we think that hope envisions, you know, what we hope to do with the company, you know, in terms of growing it, divesting our non-core assets, focusing on Guinea, and you know, seeing what the future holds, both in West Africa and further afield.
Great. Wonder if you can just tell us a little bit, obviously, about the Kada project and how 2023 was for you as the company. How 2023 was for the company, and what you sort of achieved, and update us on any results.
Yeah, look, so we did a massive program at Kada in 2023. We raised 8.3 million earlier in the year, probably around the time that we last spoke. We spent the majority of that in Guinea. We did 12,000 meters of RC drilling. We did about 6,000 meters of air core drilling, and we actually ended up doing 4,500 meters of diamond drilling. And the diamond drilling was really key for us, and that's how we've ended up with an indicated resource, because we've got this diamond drilling, we've got all the structural information that came from that, and we've really started to model this deposit as it is. You know, it's easy enough, particularly on early stage projects, just to sink a few drill holes in and join the dots, right? In terms of, you know, there's grade here and there's grade here, let's just, you know, they must match up. Most geologists know that that's never the case. You know, there's obviously some structural complications, and so what we did with this diamond drilling, and we drilled probably about 1,500 meters more than we planned to, because of the results we were seeing. We've got a really good structural understanding of the project now, and that's obviously allowed us to upgrade the confidence level. We brought in a top structural geologist, Ghislain Tournegué, out of Canada. He's a great West African geologist. He's done a lot of work in West Africa for all the big companies. He came in, had a look at the project, you know, put his stamp of or a seal of approval on it, gave us some more structural insights for going into the resource modeling that we did with Wardell Armstrong here in Cornwall, actually. So look, we're really happy with that. We know we've got a solid resource. What we also found from some of the RC and air core drilling that we did in 2023 is we've got six other targets along the belt. So just to remind people, we have 15 kilometers of mineralized strike, and this is a long strike from the Siguiri Gold Mine, which is operated by AngloGold Ashanti. They've got 10 million ounces in resource there. So I mean, it's a huge project, and very similar to ours, you know. Bulk oxide, lots of small different pits, making up a global resource, and we see, you know, very very similar geology. And obviously, Doug Jones on our board used to work at Siguiri. He's very familiar with it, and you know, he sees all the similarities when he looks at our rocks, which is very encouraging. So, like I said, we've got the Methane resource, which is just shy of 1 million ounces, and then we've got these six other targets that we hope during this next phase of work that we can drill them out. We're only going to focus on the near surface oxide stuff, and we want to get each of these new projects up to 200, 300,000 ounces, just so we're moving the whole global resource up towards that 2 million mark. Once we get to that 2 million mark or 1.5 million mark, we think that's a real catalyst then, either for us to move this project to development or for partnerships with potential potential suitors, so to speak.
If we look at the gold market during 2023, how do you see the actual gold market and price playing out for 2024 and beyond, from obviously from your perspective?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's a lot of speculation out there right now, and obviously gold finished really high in 2023. Certainly the producers on the ASX got a good uptick from that. It hasn't quite filtered down to the junior companies yet, but we certainly hope it will. Look, I think we're lining up for a great gold market. I think the Federal Reserve in the US is going to reduce its interest rates early this year, which will be a big boost for gold. Obviously, the devaluation of the US dollar will allow international buyers to be able to buy gold cheaper. And also, look, I think with the world and its geopolitical problems right now, I think gold is it's a safe haven always, and I think that's not going to change, right? So I think the current situation in the Middle East, the disruption to shipping through the Middle East, I think look, this is just all a perfect storm for a great gold market. There are a lot of people out there on X and on other platforms that say, yeah, gold's going to go to 3,500, 4,000. I mean, look, I think that's probably crazy. But look, I honestly think that we can see gold over 2,500 in the first couple of quarters of this year. And I think one of the important things is I think it's going to sustain, right? It's going to go up and it's going to stay up. I don't think there's going to be any pullback. I think, typically with high interest rates, the gold price would not typically be as high as it is. So I think once you drop those interest rates and all the other factors that I mentioned, gold's going to go up and stay up. How long that takes to filter down to the juniors, I'm not sure. But I think, as we've discussed before, the world needs junior miners. The big companies aren't, they're not out there finding their own deposits. They're buying small companies like Asara. And if companies like Asara don't have money or projects to develop, there is no gold. And we're going to see that shortage. And we're seeing that with copper right now, right? There's a big squeeze in the copper market. The issues in Panama cutting off, nearly 2% of the world's copper supply. There's not enough juniors out there exploring and finding new deposits.
Yeah, you've obviously just recently raised some capital, and I know in the junior space it has been tough this last year, or 2023. Do you see things changing during the course of 2024, where junior miners are going to get some of the capital that is needed for junior miners? And I suppose one, if there's any advice that you can give, obviously since you've raised some money recently, that you can give maybe fellow junior miners that are looking to raise some money during the course of this year.
Yeah, sure. Look, I mean, it's never easy. Even in a good market, it's not easy. I mean, there's only so much capital that can go around. Junior miners this year or last year have really struggled because everyone was putting their money into lithium. Lithium, if I had a lithium project in Guinea, well, I would have had people banging on the door, chucking me their money. Lithium's cooled down now. A lot of people have lost a lot of money on lithium because of the pullback in the price. So I think people are having a bit of a re-rate of their portfolios. They're thinking, okay, look, I've put a lot of money into lithium. A lot of people made money, a lot of people lost money. But now they're having a sort of re-rate time where they're thinking, okay, what's next, right? I think, your general retail investor and some of the institutions, they're happy to invest in junior mining. But they've got to have a good story and they've got to see the upside, which makes a lot of sense. The problem we have at the moment is there is a lot of bad projects out there getting project financing just because of the commodity or the neurology. You know, I've seen projects recently get financed just because they're supposedly a long strike from a mine. You know, when you look at their geology and their license maps, they're nowhere near the strike of the geology. They're close to a mine, but they're in different geology. And they're the sort of companies that are getting money through the door. And that needs to change. And I think, you know, your general investor needs to sort of wake up to that and do more solid technical due diligence on their investments. And I realize that not everyone has the ability to do that, but certainly the institutions do. They have teams of geologists working for them. They need to delve down and look at projects, in a solid geological way. And that would, you know, that also comes back the other way. I mean, companies like Asara, and there's a few other companies on the ASX that are of the same fate as us. We have got solid projects that will become mines in the future, whether that's Asara that does it or someone else, that aren't getting any love. You know, our share price has dropped over 50% in the last 12 months, despite the fact we spent all our money in the ground in Guinea and produced results. And that just shows you that there's just no confidence in that sort of junior sector right now. Will that change? I mean, I'd hope so. It's just really, when does the ball drop that you need junior miners to get this project pipeline for the majors? I don't know how long that's going to filter down to your regular investor. At the moment, they still seem very happy chasing the commodity of favor, which I'm led to believe is uranium right now. But even that's cooling down. It's had a run for 4 or 5 months, and now uranium's cooling off. What's next? And I think, you know, there are always going to be gold speculators out there. So once the gold price goes up, there will be money filtering into these junior companies. But, you know, from our recent fundraise, and that of our peers, what I do realize is that, you know, towards the end of 2023, there was no capital. You know, everyone was trying to raise money. Everyone had their hand in their pocket, trying to do as much as possible. You know, people were spread really thin because all these projects are raising as much capital as they can to advance work, right? I mean, a lot of people forget that, you know, we get a lot of strife from you know, message boards and emails from retail investors saying, well, look, why are you raising money again? And say, well, look, turning that drill rod costs money. And if you want us to get results, we need to turn that drill rod. And, you know, another factor of that, Rob, is the costs are going up. You know, fuel is going up in price. Contractors are going up in price. The price of geologists is going up. You know, it's no longer, you know, cheap to run a project in Africa. Right. I was comparing with a former colleague of mine who runs a project in Western Australia, and his costs are almost lower than mine. And people think, oh, Africa's cheap, you can run everything for nothing. It's not like that anymore. Supplies are considerably more expensive in West Africa. Fuel is more expensive. Personnel is still cheaper than what they would be in Australia, but only marginally, right? If you want to get the best African geologists on your team, you've got to pay them a fair salary. And like, I have no problem with that. But it does drive all the costs up. And I think people don't appreciate that.
Yeah. Obviously, you mentioned about investors not maybe doing enough due diligence. Is there a way that they can do more due diligence? Is there somewhere they should be looking? Maybe not just looking at and listening to presentations and people selling the story. Where else would you say that they could go and get this information, and so they can actually understand the information? Because obviously what you don't want to do is for the information to be too complex, because they won't be able to stand it. For instance, myself, if I went and looked at some information, that'd probably be too complex. Where would you say people should be looking if they want to do further due diligence on a particular company, so they get a better understanding and not make those wrong decisions where they're looking at projects that are not really great projects, but they've probably been sold as great projects?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a really difficult one, right? Because there are a lot of promoters out there. I sit through lots of CEO presentations, and, you know, as a geologist, I sit there and laugh because I'm like, you're hook, lining, sinkering some investors there, and they're going to lose a lot of money. I mean, that's just the way the mining industry is. The best thing you can do is go through the company reports. You know, the ASX and the TSX are very strict on their reporting. You know, we have to do quarterly reports, half-year reports, annual reports. And some companies, they do make them overly complicated. I think a lot of this is on the company, and this is something that we're trying to do at Asara, is simple, like make it more simple, our annual reports, so that your average Joe retail investor can pick it up and read it and say, okay, this is the results that they've got. This is what it means in basic layman terms, right? And draw comparisons with other projects, right? And then, you know, the financial side of it, they, you know, they can pick through that and see how much you're spending and that sort of thing. But it is difficult, and it you know, your average person that doesn't know anything about mining or geology is always going to struggle, because, you know, it is a very technically heavy discipline. But I think, you know, with the help of companies simplifying their reporting that's required for the stock exchange, I think that would really help your average investor to sort of delve down and say, okay, this is what they're doing. This is what they're spending their money on. This is the results they're getting. And this is what it means. That's the key. A lot of companies just push out, oh, this is our results. Excellent. Next year, we're going to do a feasibility study. You need to include in those reports why you think you're going to move to a feasibility study. You've got these results. What do they mean? There's that gap in there. And I know a lot of companies, you know, a lot of this corporate reporting, it's a chore. It takes a long time. They just want to bang it out as quick as possible. A lot of them will just copy and paste their news releases and put them all in one block, which doesn't help anyone. But that would be a good start. And, you know, like on the TSX, you've got the 43-101 technical reports. You know, again, they're obviously very technically heavy, but if it's been written well, you know, the conclusions and recommendations section should be able to give investors an idea of, you know, what's next in the story. But I think that's the key thing, is a lot of investors rely too much on other people. You know, they rely on the people on X, Twitter, whatever we call it now, you know, on LinkedIn, and a lot of it's promotional, right? You know, a lot of the people that, you know, are promoting stuff on Twitter, for example, you know, they might be the best stock pickers ever, but they're doing it to help themselves, right? I've always worked with a mentor as if people are talking about a stock on Twitter, it's too late, right? It's already, yeah. You know, you haven't got in early enough. But your average retail investor doesn't realize that. And they say, oh, you know, Rick Rule is posting about this. It must be good. Let's get in. Let's put my money in. Rick Rule was in a year and a half ago. You know, he's already made his money. You know, and he's waiting for you guys to come in so he can make more money. Yeah, it's just that sort of thing. And I think people rely too much on this promotional stuff. And it's the same with, you know, a lot of CEOs come and they do these marketing videos and, you know, they promote everything out of their company. And to be honest, if you don't have a geological background, you don't know whether they're talking the truth or lying. You have no idea, right? And I think, you know, if you've got a CEO that's a good presenter, I mean, look, you could fleece everyone, right? I'm not saying that people are. But that's how it is. And I think that's the main thing that investors can take from it, is that, you know, basically do your own research. Don't rely on other people. Delve into these reports. Even if you don't understand them fully, the more you read, the more you'll understand. Read reports from successful companies, you know, that, you know, we use a lot of comparisons. We use the Siguiri mine, for example. Go and read about Siguiri. What is Siguiri? How much did they produce? How long did it take them to find the deposit? That sort of thing. You know, there are a lot of public information about most projects out there. And that's the best thing that an investor can do, is build up that sort of research base and say, okay, look, Asara have an oxide gold deposit in Guinea. Okay, what other oxide gold deposits do I know? Okay, this one. Okay, I'll read their report. Come back to Asara. How does their report compare to them? Okay, Asara's trading at 1 cent a share. These guys are trading at 8 cents a share, but they've got the same projects. That means Asara is undervalued, right? So you just got to sort of build up that sort of research base and knowledge. And that's what I do, like not even just from an investing point of view, but, you know, just from a project due diligence point of view. Every time I'm looking at a project, you know, I get a lot of projects across my desk, and, you know, it's a case of, okay, copper project in Zambia. Great. What do I know about copper projects in Zambia? Nothing. What type of project is it? Okay, it's an IOCG or it's a copper porphyry. Okay, what other copper porphyries do I know? Jump to that, read about those, then come back to it's just simple research, right? And I think it doesn't even have to take a lot of time, because a lot of these company reports these days are pretty condensed. So, you know, in a day or 2 days worth of work, an investor can go, you know, read 10, 20 reports and then come back to your company and say, okay, this is what I've learned. This is how you're comparable. This is how you're different. And then they have to make their own valuation as to, you know, what that means. Does that mean we're undervalued? Does it mean we're overvalued? Are there any likelihoods of a big stock increase in the next coming months due to what you've said you're going to do for work? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, that's some great advice, definitely. And that's good advice for people in our industry that may be in other parts of within mining, whether they're in corporate, whether they're in HR, whether they're in procurement, that have been in our industry for a long time, but don't actually understand what's happening out on site and in the ground. And if they're looking to invest, that's some valuable advice, especially the comparisons. I like that comparisons. If you're looking at a particular company to invest in, looking at surrounding companies, and like you said, looking at their how they got to where they got to, and looking at that their story and how it compares to the company they're actually looking at the moment. So yeah, that's definitely some good advice there.
No, definitely. It's really important. It's what we do as a company, right? When we're looking at our projects, we do comparisons to our peers. We run them all the time. How is our peers performing? You know, how is their project going? What work are they doing next? Are we on the same timeline as them? It's a great due diligence tool.
Yeah. I know you're obviously gold focused, but I know I suppose personally, you also look at obviously lithium, cobalt, as you mentioned, uranium. I wondered if you wanted to have a quick talk about any of those commodities and how you see them playing out over the course of this year.
Yeah, look, battery metals are key right now, right? Everyone is in the battery metal space. Even I get dragged in occasionally through the consulting side of things. And look, everyone's been focused on lithium. And, you know, lithium's had its day. I think, you know, there's lithium all over the world. Geologists have always said the same thing, that there's abundance of lithium. We just haven't focused on getting it out because we haven't really needed it. Now we do need it, at least for now. There's been this huge rush. But, you know, with the big projects like SQM and Albemarle and Liontown, you know, we've got enough lithium for now. I think all these juniors that are scraping around Africa chasing little pegmatites, yeah, they could have a struggle in the future unless something really changes. And look, it's the same with cobalt. You know, cobalt was flavor of the month a couple of years ago, and now it's, you know, one of its lowest prices. You don't see many cobalt players out there anymore. There was a flurry of them, as I said, a couple of years ago, specifically during COVID. I mean, I think every company I spoke to was a cobalt company. That's not the case anymore, and people have had to diversify. I think, you know, uranium as well, it's a pretty niche market. I mean, there's a shed load of uranium around the world. I'm seeing a lot of projects that I looked at back in, you know, 2011, 2012, coming back online now. And that's great to see. And that's a real testament to, you know, just because your project's not big enough to work right now doesn't mean it won't be in the future. So if you can just hold on to it, you know, that's a great, great thing. Uranium, we're having a great spike right now. I think I read a story this morning that uranium prices are the highest they've been since, I don't even know, 2015 or something like that. So that, you know, that's great, great news for the uranium market. And you're going to see, you know, when you're down at Indaba next month, I'm sure you're going to see a lot of uranium companies that you didn't even know existed. Which is good. I mean, they're going to have their day. I think, look, two of the biggest commodities that are going to come and be very important in 2024 are copper and nickel. I think, you know, copper is such an important commodity, has such a wide range of uses. It is key to the green evolution of the world, or whatever the buzzword we're using this week is. And we are in short supply of copper. You know, as you know, copper mines are typically extremely large. You think of the large copper porphyries in Chile and Peru, like Yanacocha, for example. Massive, massive mines, bulk tonnage, very low grade. You know, they take a long time to find and a long time to develop. And I mean, we just don't have a pipeline. I mean, you've got Barrick now at Reko Diq doing their feasibility study, but that's going to be at least 4 or 5 years before they get any production out of that. You had Cobre Panama, obviously First Quantum Minerals, all set up producing now they're not producing, and that knocked 2% off of the world supply. I mean, 2% is massive. It might sound like a small number, but if they go 2% and then say Chile has some industrial action, which it's pretty famous for, you could easily lose 15-20% of the world supply of copper. And you know, what do you do then? You know, we're not in the sort of business of re-engineering things. Like, what do you replace copper with? I mean, there's no work being put into that, right? And this comes back to what we mentioned at the start of the podcast, is that there needs to be money going into these junior companies to fund these discoveries. You know, people like Barrick and First Quantum, you know, they're not doing the grassroots discovery stuff that we do, right? So, you know, for me, particularly in the copper space, the supply is just going to get tighter and tighter and tighter until the ball drops. And when that ball drops, the copper price is going to skyrocket. And that's going to have, you know, ramifications for all of us, because, you know, we're at the end of the supply chain, and, you know, all our consumer goods that use copper are going to go up exponentially in price, right? One of the good things about a big rise in the copper price, it will encourage investment into the junior sector, allowing juniors to go and explore for copper. And the same can be said about nickel, right? Nickel goes in and out of favor. It's a bit of a middleman, but I personally think that in 2024, nickel's going to have a good run. And there's a few good companies out there at the moment looking for good nickel sulfide projects. And, I think it's been relatively unloved. But you know, there is a supply deficit in the nickel space. And, I think that will be realized this year as well. So I think, look, if I was to look at projects moving forward, you know, nickel and copper would probably be at the top of my list. I think anyone trying to get into uranium right now has probably missed the boat. I wouldn't be going and picking up a uranium project and trying to market it now, because you're just too far off that value curve. But yeah, certainly juniors that are on the verge of discovering a large copper project, I think, you know, it's a no-brainer.
And concluding, just wonder what the outlook is for ASARA for 2024. And also, is there anything else that you would like to sort of add to give some more information to our listeners?
Yeah, look, for ASARA, it's going to be a busy year again, I think. We've currently got 150 square kilometers of licenses in Guinea. We've applied for another 100 square kilometers. We hope that they're going to get granted pretty soon. So that's going to almost double our land holding, which will obviously make things busy. As I mentioned, we've got these six new targets that we really want to drill out and sort of move up to that resource level. So there's going to be a lot of drilling coming in the next few months. We hope to kick that off probably in February. There are a few issues in Guinea with accessing fuel at the moment due to the fuel depot disaster that they had just before Christmas. But the government has worked fantastically to try and fix those issues. And look, we all hope that they can get that depot back online. And obviously, anyone that's been affected by that disaster gets back to normal in early 2024. But once the fuel supply has been secured, we'll get back to drilling. And like I said, drilling these six earlier stage targets, see what we've got there. And then we've got the Berico project north of the current resource, which we've drilled 300 meters of it, and there's about 5 kilometers of strike. So it'll be a case of systematically expanding that out. And then look, hopefully still divesting our other non-core assets, which would obviously help get more cash in the bank. You know, no junior company likes to come to the market every year with their hand out. So if, you know, if we can divest those assets, that would be fantastic for us. And hopefully that will give some investor confidence in the company, and that coupled with some good results, it should be a good year for ASARA.
And lastly, is there anything else that you want to give our audience? Anything, I suppose, anything to look out for in 2024?
No, look, I think, I guess the biggest thing is give some love to your junior miners. You know, it's been a tough year for us. And, you know, we're all out here doing the best job we can. And, you know, we need support to find discoveries. So, you know, look at the junior companies, even if you think they're quite far away from a development decision, you know, it's worth having a punt if you're able to.
Tim, really appreciate your time. All the best for 2024. And I think gold will I think gold will be one of the key commodities as well. I know all the central banks have been buying record gold over the last few years, and I think that's only going to increase. So, like I said, I wish you well for 2024. If our audience wants to reach out to you, if they want to follow, obviously, your story and the company, how can they go about doing that? What sort of social media platform channels are you on?
Yeah, look, we're slowly building our social media. So we've got a nice LinkedIn profile that we upload all our news to, and then we're obviously on X. That's Asara Resources, and we've just started up an Instagram actually, also at Asara Resources. So it's a little bare there at the moment, but we hope as the news comes through, we'll be able to get some nice pictures out of Guinea. And then look, also, you know, our website asararesources.com. You can contact us through that, and always happy to have a chat.
Yeah, great. We'll include those in the show notes accompanying this episode. So, yeah, all the best again. Hopefully, our audience enjoyed that episode. As always, really appreciate your continued support. Please keep sharing these episodes far and wide to people within the industry and obviously people outside of the industry. And again, this episode is a case of sharing this episode to people outside of the industry, because gold is, I suppose, one of those commodities that people will invest in, but also gold jewelry, for instance. So it could resonate with people outside of our mining industry as well. So appreciate continued support. All the best for 2024. And until next time, happy mining.
Thank you for listening. Remember to reach out to Rob via the show notes, and be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Until next time, happy mining, helping each other to improve the mining industry.